Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. It's my joy, it's my absolute honor and privilege, and such a delightful moment to be back with you to discuss Bhagwan's Vahini series. Since we have started the Vahini Satsang many months ago, it has always been a joy to go back and read Bhagwan's literature, the words that Swami himself has written. Every now and then, people ask, which is the book that we should read? People ask, which is the Purana, which is the scripture, which is the holy text that is the best guide for the current times, for the changed circumstances? And my response has always been that while we have so many texts and all those texts are filled with eternal truths, but when the Lord took a human form in the current time, he distilled from all these tons of scriptures and holy texts what is most relevant for us and gave it in the form of Vahinis. Whether we have read the Bhagavad Gita or not, if we have read the Bhagavad Vahini, the Gita Vahini, then we know the essence and we know what from Bhagavatam we should know. Even if we have not read the Bhagavatam, if you have read the Bhagavata Vahini, even if we have not read the Upanishads are so many. And to have a proper understanding of the Upanishads, you have to learn Sanskrit. The translations of the Sanskrit mantras give you only some glimpse of the true glory of the mantras. But to make it easy for us, Swami wrote Upanishad Vahini. So if you read the Upanishad Vahini, at least you have known the essence of the Upanishads. And it is for this reason that diving into this ocean of Vahinis, picking up pearls which can adorn us in our thought, in our word, in our deed, has been a very beautiful experience, a beautiful journey. We did 108 sessions of Prema Vahini and then moved on to Sandeha Nivarini. And today we continue this holy text. We are in chapter 8 of Sandeha Nivarini. We divided this chapter into 3 segments, and in the previous session we started the discussion on segment 8.2, what Bhagwan mentioned in the very first few lines of this segment itself was so much to contemplate upon, and that's how we spent the previous week. Today we will listen to chapter 8.2 once again, and then let's see how Bhagwan wants us to internalize and understand the message that he has given us in this segment of chapter 8 of Sandeha Nivarini. Let's listen to what Bhagwan has written.
Let that be. Are you treasuring the gems given on the birthday and making good use of them?
As far as possible, with my maximum effort, using the quality of buddhi granted by you, I am putting them into action.
What do you mean by as far as possible? For bhaktas like you, what other task is there greater than this? Why is it not possible? You only need faith and will. Then it should not be difficult at all to carry out the duty.
Swami, you have yourself said that even when there is faith and even when one has the will, putting things into practice may be difficult for want of favorable circumstances, and also because the meaning of things may not be grasped clearly.
Oh, that means that both these, want of favorable circumstances and want of understanding are bothering you? Well, if you have not understood, ask. And if you have no favorable atmosphere, tell me, what is the obstacle?
Doubt is the biggest obstacle. What can be bigger than that? Even after hearing so much, the demon catches hold of me off and on. I don't know why.
The first reason for that is you not having faith in yourself, born out of the conviction that you are really Atma Swarupa. The second reason, taking the divinity in man as mere humanity only and getting lost in the pursuit of sense enjoyment. These demons pounce on you for just these two reasons only. Instead, if you establish yourself in God, understanding the divinity in man as divinity itself, this demon of doubt will not attack you. You simply must give up this adhyasa which makes you mix things up.
There, you use now and then ununderstandable words. That makes me even more confused, Swami.
I will never tell you ununderstandable words. You have no power to understand, so you feel worried. I use them really in order to make you understand their meaning. Now, in what I told you, which is the difficult word?
You use the word adhyasa. What does it mean, Swami?
What? You do not know the meaning of that? Seeing one form and taking it to be another. Superimposing one thing upon another.
How is that? On which object do we superimpose another? Tell me.
Well, seeing a rope and imagining it to be a snake. Seeing waves of hot air in the sun and imagining them to be horses. Seeing a mirror shining in the sun and taking it to be a lamp, and so on.
But what is it that I see and what do I take it to be?
You see Paramatma in this form of Prakriti and take it to be mere Prapancha or the world, and you are afraid. It is on account of this delusion that you have become the victim of all these varieties of weaknesses and you are declining through doubt and illusion. If you see it right, the delusion will vanish, the fear will disappear, the conviction on the divine will be firmly and boldly established in you. To get that firmness, the lamp of discrimination is necessary. How much a man suffers, so long as he sees the rope as a snake? How much is the fear, the delusion? Can it be realized how all that vanished as soon as it was seen in the light? Similarly, these doubts and delusions too will vanish unawares as soon as you know that Prakriti is Paramatma. Imposing a delusion on a delusion, imagining one object to be another, this is called adhyasa, my boy.
But Swami, how can Prakriti be said to be Paramatma? When you ask me to discern this world, which appears as Prapancha to the eye, as Paramatma, doubt is sure to arise.
That is true. Still, if the reality is reasoned out, even what you now see will appear as Paramatma. Cloth cannot be formed without yarn, isn't it? Yarn is essential for cloth. In fact, it is all yarn. In spite of this, yarn is not spoken of as cloth, nor is cloth called yarn. This is exactly the relationship between Prakriti and Paramatma. Paramatma is the yarn of which the cloth, Prakriti, is formed. Has the yarn and the cloth become separate? No. The yarn is used in one way, the cloth in another way. But for this reason only, it would be wrong to consider yarn and cloth as different.
Yes, Swami, Since Prakriti is formed of Paramatma, it is clear that they are not separate. Now, if both these are the same, where is Jiva in this?
That is exactly the doubt that is tormenting you, my boy. The Jiva is the I, consciousness. The Jiva is associated with the limitations of body and the senses. But he is the Atma, Jivatma, Pratyagatma, Chidatma, doer, enjoyer, everything.
So that is segment 8.2 of chapter 8 of Sandhya Nivarini. And as I was also listening along with you, I felt that it should not stop. So beautifully, the conversation between Bhakta and Bhagavan was going on. So to come back to the opening words of segment 8.2, when the devotee says, Swami, I am trying to practice all the directions that you gave in the previous chapter, and I am trying to do as far as possible. And Swami says, why do you say that as far as possible? It should not be difficult at all to carry out this duty. All you need is faith and will. And Bhagwan very clearly says that if this is not important for you, what else, what other task is keeping you busy? That is what we discussed in the previous session. So now here the Bhakta is telling Swami, you have yourself said that even when there is faith and even when one has the will, putting things into practice can be difficult because of two reasons. Sometimes we may not have favorable circumstances, and at other times we might not have understood the teachings properly. We might not have good comprehension of the meaning of the direction to really put it into action. And so Swami says, okay, so you are saying that sometimes you may not have good surroundings, and sometimes you might not have understood. Okay, so if you have not understood, you ask me. And if you are saying that you don't have the right kind of environment to practice these teachings, okay, tell me what is the problem there. And that is where the Bhakta says, doubt. The biggest problem is somehow there is some cobweb of doubt. And because there is a cobweb of doubt, our faith is not 100%. And that's what the Bhakta is telling. Doubt is the biggest obstacle. What can be bigger than that? Even after hearing so much, the demon of doubt catches hold of me off and on. And then Bhagwan says, do you know why this happens? You not having faith in yourself. You not having the conviction that you are really Atma Swarupa. You constantly identifying yourself with your little mind, little body, little identity. You associate yourself with your job, with your family role, with the different little achievements that you have been able to gather, the little talents that you have. You think of yourself as someone's son or someone's daughter or someone's spouse or someone's father, someone's wife, and that's the reason why you are not able to have complete faith in yourself. You are not realizing that you are just not these limited identities. You are really Atma Swarupa. If we completely believe in that, then doubt will not be there, Bhagavan is telling. In fact, once you are firmly established in this feeling, Once we have the faith which is born out of the conviction that we are not the body, not the mind, but actually truly the spirit, the Atma, Swami says, then there will not be any more doubts. In fact, that reminds me of beautiful little interaction that happened way back in the early days of Bhagwan's University. The Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning was declared a deemed university in 1981. Although Bhagwan's colleges have been functioning since the 60s, back then Bhagwan would spend a good part of the year, almost 9 months, in Vrindavan, in the ashram in Bengaluru. And many students long to get admission into his college for the precious opportunity of being in his physical proximity. They wanted to be in Vrindavan, in Bengaluru, Bhagwan's ashram there, be a student. You are in Bengaluru, but so untouched with the city life, you are in this beautiful heaven of Vrindavan, the Vrindavan that Bhagwan has recreated. This is not the Vrindavan of Lord Krishna. This is the beautiful little Vrindavan of Lord Sai Krishna. And it was the same Leelas. Just the time was different and the place was different. But the essence of the Leelas and the nature of the Leelas were the same. There's one student who had joined from the northeast of India, and he was so keen to become a Sai student. In fact, in that effort to become Bhagwan's student and to prepare himself for the chance, he gave up non-vegetarian food. He made a habit of walking, waking up early in the morning. He stopped hanging out with the friends there. So he tried to do everything that he felt would make Swami happy. He tried to reorient his life in the way a Sai student leads his life in the hostel, and he thought that will please Swami and that will ensure that Bhagwan accepts him as his student. So overall, he made his life as Spartan as possible. And Bhagwan's grace did dawn on this boy, and he did get admission into Bhagwan's college. And since he was already into this mindset and already waking up early, not eating non-veg, and leading a very disciplined life, when he entered the portals of the Vrindavan hostel, he did not find the schedule difficult at all. He did not find it rigorous, because physically also he was a very fit person. He came from a farmer's family, and so he had very good stamina, and it was not at all a problem for him to wake up early, do the exercises, do the prayers. The hectic life of a Sai student was very easy for him to adapt to. For him, it was like fish taking to the waters. In fact, it was so instantaneous for him, so easy for him to merge into the hostel ambience, that he took upon the responsibility to ring the bell for Suprabhatam. So, which means, you know, you have to wake up much before the other students. So he was the one who woke up very early in the morning and rang the bell so that all the other boys wake up for Suprabhatam, for the morning prayer, every single day. In fact, many boys would leave chits around his bed to wake them up at different timings in the morning. And when he would get up in the morning, he would see those chits of boys and go and wake up. He was sort of like an alarm clock, human alarm clock. And we are talking about, you know, in those days, in the 70s. And no mobile phones, and people had very, very minimal use of gadgets. So he would very happily do all this work in the hostel. In fact, his cupboard was like an altar, and every day he would do puja with flowers, incense, and so on. So 6 months passed in this manner in the hostel, and the boy was very happy. His dream of becoming a Sai student was seeing the light of the day. He was enjoying being Bhagwan's student. One day, suddenly Bhagwan called him and Swami asked, "How are you? How is hostel life?" And so with all enthusiasm, the boy said, "Swami, I am very fine, Swami. I have become spiritual, Swami." And Swami said, "Oh, you have become spiritual. So what do you do in the hostel?" Very curiously, Swami asked, and there was sort of a subdued, mischievous smile. And extremely excited, this boy said, "Swami, I wake up early in the morning, Swami, and I am the one who rings the bell for Suprabhatam every day, Swami." And Swami said, "Oh, is it? Do you do it every day?" Swami also reflected that same enthusiasm and intensity, and Swami said, "So you do it every day?" And now the boy was in full flow. He said, "Yes, Swami, I participate in the Suprabhatam wholeheartedly, Swami." "Oh, then Swami also, what about Nagar Sankirtan?" Nagar Sankirtan is doing bhajan early in the morning, singing the Lord's name and going in the streets. And the boy now answered with full gusto, "Swami, I participate in Nagar Sankirtan also without fail, Swami." In those days, the boys would go out of the Vrindavan ashram into the nearby villages in Bengaluru. And it used to happen in the early hours of Thursdays and Sundays. So they would sing bhajans and they would soak in the early morning beautiful vibes, beautiful oxygen, and fill the air with Swami's chants. And so this used to happen in the early days. Of course, later on the boys would do the bhajans inside the Vrindavan ashram itself. But in those days they would step out of the ashram and go into the nearby villages and do the Nagar Sankirtan. So Swami looked at this boy very keenly, and then Swami's questioning continued. Now Swami asked slightly different question. Swami said, "Okay, how much do you talk?" He was by nature a bit talkative, this boy, so he said, "Swami, I have curtailed it, Swami. I talk much less now, actually." And Swami immediately said, "But what is the use? Meter is always on, only volume is down. Meter is always on, only volume is down," Swami said. Which means that conversations are continuous. It is going on in your head. It's just that sometimes it is coming out louder, sometimes it is little less in volume. It is all the time going on inside. Sometimes it finds expression, sometimes it is not finding that much expression, but even though there is no sound, does not mean there is silence inside. And when Swami said that meter is always on, only volume is down, the boy shrunk. He shrunk a little, but he was still strong. And then came Bhagwan's another question. Swami said, "Okay, what about being on time for lunch and dinner? Do they wait for you?" And he said, "No, Swami, I'm always on time." Now his vigor returned. He said, "No, I'm always on time, Swami, for food sessions." Then Swami said, "What about night milk, night prayer? In the hostel, we always have night prayer and night milk." And he said, "Swami, I take it every day, Swami. And I do the night prayer also very, very diligently, Swami." So now he was completely a picture of confidence, because whatever Bhagwan is asking, you know, he had done. I mean, he's following everything that a student is expected to follow in the hostel, waking up early in the morning, to going for jogging, going the Nagar Sankirtan, doing the prayers, attending the classes and doing, you come back, you go for darshan, then you do the prayers, you have milk, so everything, you're in time for the food sessions. So now that he had presented such an impressive report card of his stay in the hostel, of his progress, and this, he told Swami initially that he is really spiritual because he's been following everything that is mandated to be followed for any boy in the hostel. And after giving such a impressive report of his 6 months stay in his hostel, now the boy was waiting with eager anticipation as to how Bhagwan would possibly reward him, because he had yes for every question that Bhagwan asked. And generally Swami would be so pleased. Little things you do and Swami would reward you. You sing a bhajan little nicely, Swami can create something and, you know, fill your pockets with. You sing one song nicely and then Swami will probably create a ring for you. If you just do a little seva and Swami wants to gift you a pen. I mean, we have seen that Bhagwan's heart would melt so much for very little things. So now that, you know, he had given such a commendable report of his progress as a student, as a Sai student, so he was waiting for Bhagwan's reward. You know, because you have always seen that little acts of discipline, small acts of dedication would really melt Bhagwan's heart, and he would fill the students with some amazing tokens of his grace and blessings. It could be ring, a chain, pendant, vibhuti, or if not anything, Swami would definitely say, take namaskar, take paad namaskar. So, he was waiting for Bhagwan to reward him. And he thought, after so many days, he's got this opportunity, and when Swami is talking to him, and he was in the right place to give all the answers in a manner that would make Bhagwan happy. He has lived up to Bhagwan's expectation. So Swami now looked at this boy, and obviously Swami was sensing what is going on in the boy's mind, and Swami keenly watched the boy. Swami looked into his eyes and Swami just gently smiled and Swami said, now you have become a human being. Very good. Keep it up. And Swami walked away. Swami said, now you have become a human being. Keep it up. For the boy, it was a huge disappointment. Then, I mean, as a student, he thought he definitely deserves a reward for doing all these things for 6 months. But now when he reflects on this, he says, only now I realize the import of what Bhagwan had said. He says, since then I have reflected on this so many times and it has immensely guided me on my spiritual path. 40 years later, he says, even till this day, I wake up early in the morning and I lead a life much in sync with the hostel schedule that I followed then. And this is what has given me tremendous strength and plenty of peace. Let not the spiritual practices or devotional exercises we do make us feel more evolved than the others. That is in fact the minimum we should do, for we are not animals with tails or birds with feathers. Nevertheless, a beautiful human is divine in thought, word and deed. The divine too descends to be a beautiful human indeed. The reason I shared this story, this little conversation, is Bhagwan is telling You not having faith in yourself, born out of the conviction that you are really Atma Swarupa, is the reason why you have doubt. So Swami told this boy, everything that you did, this is ensuring that now you are like a human being. But this should take us to feel that we are not just human, but we are divine. As someone said, we are not human beings having divine experiences. We are divine beings having sometimes human experiences. That is what Swami is telling should be our conviction. We should always feel that I am divine. In fact, many times it happens. If I get angry, then I say, it's okay. Earth is human. I am human. You know, yeah, I am greedy. I am human. I get angry. I am human. Yeah, I have these desires. I am human. It's normal. That is what Swami is telling. That is not normal. You are not just human. You are the very Atma Swarupa. You have everything in you to rise to such a great state. That's what Bhagavan is telling here. Taking the divinity in man as mere humanity only and getting lost in the pursuit of sense enjoyment. Swami says this is the second reason why you are not able to practice Swami's teachings. Swami says first you got to have faith and you have to have will. And when the devotee says, Swami, even if I have faith and will, I don't have favorable circumstances, I don't sometimes understand the meaning. The Swami says, okay, why is this happening? And then the devotee says, Swami, doubt. That's where Swami is telling, doubt is happening because you are not thinking of yourself as divine. You are taking that divinity that is there in you, taking the divinity in man as mere humanity. You are thinking, I'm not divine, I'm mere man. And that's why we always feel that it's okay. Greed is good. Desire is normal. To be sometimes angry is the way anyone reacts. Yeah. To go after sense enjoyment is nothing abnormal. That's what everyone does. And that is where Swami is telling. This is the reason. This attitude is what is blocking you from being able to practice Bhagavan's teachings. This is what is leading to the doubts. This is what is ensuring that you don't have faith and willpower. Swami says, these demons pounce on you for just these two reasons only. First reason is you not having that faith, not having that conviction that I am Atma Swarupa, I am actually truly a spark of God, I am truly the Atma, I am not the body and the mind. And second, thinking that I am just human, I am not divine. And thinking that, yeah, I am human, so obviously I have to go after sense enjoyment, that is normal. Swami says, instead, if you establish yourself in God, understanding the divinity in man as divinity itself, this demon of doubt will not attack you. If I constantly remind myself that I am not just this person with this name and form, I am truly divine. I am truly the light of God. I am truly the smile that I see on Swami's face. I am truly the shine that I see on Ganesha's face. I am truly the power that I see on Mother Durga. If I constantly keep feeling myself in this way, then we will just break the shackles of the limitations of the body and we will be filled with so much of divine energy to practice the teachings. Swami says, if you establish yourself in God, understanding the divinity in man as divinity itself, then then this demon of doubt will not attack you. And then Bhagavan says, you simply must give up this adhyasa which makes you mix things up. And when Bhagavan uses this word adhyasa, that's when the devotee says, Swami, what is this adhyasa? You are using such difficult words. I don't know what this means. And Swami says, you don't know what is adhyasa? It means seeing one form and taking it to be another, superimposing one thing upon another. And that is where the devotee says, Swami, I didn't understand. What is it that I'm superimposing? What is it that I'm mistaking? What is it that I'm seeing and thinking that it is something else? And that's where Swami gives that famous example from the Upanishads. And Swami is telling, see, you see a rope and you think it to be a snake. How foolish it is if you look at waves of hot air in the sun and you think, oh, these are horses. You see this warm rays of the sun and you think these are horses. Or you take a mirror and you see the shine of the mirror in the sun. You see the reflection of the mirror and then that light looks like a lamp to you. How foolish it is to think that this is a lamp and not a reflection. How foolish it is to think that these are horses when they are just hot air. So the bhakta says, okay, I understand these examples, but what am I doing like this? Why do you say that I am mistaking things in this manner? And that's where Swami says, what you do is, you see Paramatma, you see God in the form of Prakriti, in nature, you see God in the nature, and you take it to be mere world, you take it to be mere nature. You see Paramatma in Prakriti and take it to be mere Prapancha, you take it to be mere world. You are deluded. Just like you are deluded about yourself, you are deluded about the surroundings. And because of this delusion, you become a victim of all these varieties of weaknesses. And once you are a victim of these weaknesses, then you decline through doubt and illusion. So there is doubt. There is no conviction that you are Atmaswarupa. And what aggravates the problem is this illusion. So if you see it right, the delusion will vanish. Once the delusion vanishes, fear will go. Conviction will become stronger and it will be boldly established in you. Conviction that you are divine. But for that, Swami says, that lamp of discrimination is necessary. You will continue to suffer if you see the rope as a snake. That's just a rope, but you think of it as a snake, obviously you will keep having fear and you will suffer. But the moment you know that it is just a rope, everything vanishes. The moment you realize that everything around is not just nature, it is divine, it is not Prakriti, it is Paramatma, then everything will become clear. All the doubts and delusions will vanish. I mean, yes, all these things in theory appears quote-unquote understandable, but in reality, practicing these things can be a challenge, and that is what is the spiritual journey all about. So Swami is telling, this superimposition of a delusion on a delusion, imagining one thing to be another, this is called adhyasa. And the bhakta asks, Swami, how can Prakriti be said to be Paramatma? You are saying this whole nature is God, but when you ask me to discern this world, which appears as just the world to the eye, you are telling me to think of this world as not just the world, but think of it as God. It's difficult really for me to fathom this. Difficult for me to really understand this. Let alone practicing this. What I see around is all these objects. Objects with name and form, and you are just telling me, no, this is all God. How do I really grasp this? That's where Swami says, if the reality is reasoned out, even what you now see will appear as Paramatma. Swami gives the example of cloth and yarn. Swami says, can cloth be formed without yarn? Yarn is absolutely essential to make a cloth, right? That is the raw material through which you make the cloth. What is a cloth? Actually, it is just the coming together of yarn, isn't it? But when you look at a cloth, we don't say it is yarn. We say it is cloth. Yarn is not spoken of as cloth, nor is cloth called yarn. When you have a cloth, you say it's a cloth. You don't say it's yarn. Swami says this is exactly the relationship between Prakriti and Paramatma, between nature, the creation and creator. Swami is telling the yarn is the Paramatma. The divine is the yarn. Using the yarn of divinity, the cloth is made, and the cloth is nature, cloth is Prakriti. So can you ever separate them? Can you ever separate yarn from cloth? There is no way you can separate nature and God. Every speck of nature is made with God. The yarn is used in one way, the cloth is used in another way. But the yarn and cloth cannot be thought of as different. They are not separate. So this is how Bhagavan explains the relationship. And Bhagavan tries to communicate to the devotee the delusion. Why is the doubt happening? The doubt is happening because you are not convinced that you are the light of the supreme principle, and you are not able to see that everything around you is not the diversity. What is there around you is only unity. In fact, in a very beautiful discourse which Bhagavan gave on July 30th, 1996, Bhagavan says, what is Brahma and what is illusion? What is Maya? Swami says, a person is a combination of existence, knowledge and bliss. Sat, Chit, Ananda. Name and form. Sat, Chit, Ananda. That is what is Brahman. That is what is the supreme divine principle. The name and form that you see in the world, that is what is illusion. That is what is Maya. The name and form are visible to the naked eye. Because only the name and form is visible to the naked eye, that is the reason why we fall into the delusion. Swami gives a very beautiful example of the ocean. Swami says the water of the ocean takes the form of waves. So how do waves happen in the ocean? It happens because of the wind. When there is wind, it lifts water on the surface of the ocean and they form waves. Without the help of the wind, there will be no waves. If there is no wind, water is very still. Swami says, just as waves are formed in the ocean with the power of wind, the waves of individuals originate in this ocean of Satchidananda due to the effect of illusion. So, this wind is this illusion. What is only there is the ocean of Satchidananda. That is the ocean of supreme divinity. Ocean of the ultimate supreme consciousness. That is the ocean. It is because of this illusion, because of this wind, that there are these little waves of names and forms. If there is no illusion, if there is no wind, then there are no individual waves. What is left is only that ocean, Satchidananda. So these individuals with names and forms and everything happens because of the illusion. The individual has originated from the Satchidananda, from the ocean of Satchidananda. The individual has originated from the Supreme Consciousness, and that's why it is just like the wave is nothing but the water in the ocean, isn't it? The wave, that's why everything is just that. It's because of the delusion that we think it is separate. It, just like it is foolish to say that the wave is different from the ocean. The wave is never different from the ocean. It just taken a name and form. Individual is something like that, Swami says. Once you recognize this truth, then you will not be deluded. Swami says, just like they say, Brahmavid Brahmaiva Bhavati, the knower of Brahman becomes verily Brahman. You are carried away by the diversity of names and forms. You think of diversity. Because you think of diversity, you experience diversity. But once this illusion goes, when you know the same power that separates waves from the ocean will again make them merge with the ocean. Once we know that the same wave, that same wind which separated, it is the same wind which will again make the individual merge into the ocean. What emerges from the ocean is bound to merge into the ocean. That's why all these waves have birth and death. All the individuals have birth and death. Everything that has name and form has birth and death. But the ocean is constant. Brahman has neither birth nor death. It signifies infinity. It has no end. Wherever you see it is water, water, water. That's how the ocean is. Swami says, wherever you look, that is Brahman. Everywhere there is Brahman. There is nothing in this world that is not Brahman. Entire cosmos is Brahman. It is only because of the limitations of our intellect and understanding, we are unable to understand this eternal and the infinite principle, Swami says. Just as we think the rope to be snake, we create diversity of beings in the unity of Brahman. And because we create in our mind this diversity, we are not able to see the underlying unity in the diversity. That is the reason why we have doubts. It's because of this delusion that we have these doubts. And that is the reason why Swami used to always emphasize, do not belittle yourself. Do not say that you are mere human. Never say that I am mere human. Never say that, yeah, I am human, so I will be weak. I am human, so obviously I will succumb to desire. I am human, so obviously I will have a little bit of jealousy. I am human, so obviously nothing wrong to be proud. Swami says, do not belittle yourself. Don't say you are mere human being. Not being able to understand the truth, that is what is ignorance. Knowledge lies in the realization of truth. Everything in this world is permeated with knowledge, Swami says. Sarvam Jnanamayam. The whole world is permeated with this knowledge. And this knowledge cannot be got from books. In the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa, very beautifully, the Master, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa, tells a disciple, if you want to know about God, people think we can get this knowledge of God by reading the scriptures. And he gives this lovely example and he says, if I have to know about Mr. X, who is the most wealthiest person in the city, then should I try and find out, okay, where are his houses, how many cars does he have, where are his properties, how much money he has in the bank? Should I go and try and find out all this information? Or is it better for me to just go there and somehow enter the house? Either you try and make friends with the gatekeeper, or either you don't bother with the hurtful remarks that the gatekeeper gives you, or you somehow try to appease the gatekeeper, somehow find a way to enter the house and try to get an audience. Try and speak. Go to Mr. X and talk to him. If you talk to him, he will know everything. Why are you trying to read about him and guessing what he is, who he is, what he has? Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa says, try to know, try to approach God directly. Don't try to understand him through all these books and everything. If you know him, if you strive for him, everything else will be known. Once you speak to Mr. X, you will know about him and you will know about everything else. Once you know God, you will know about everything else in the world. It will just come to you. So once we know this truth, everything around will just melt. Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma, Swami says. In fact, in the same beautiful book, which has lovely conversations with Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa and the disciples, the gospel, in that Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa gives a very beautiful difference of what is Maya and what is Daya. He says, to identify yourself with your identity, with your name and form, and to love your family, your friends. You think that this person is mine, that person is mine. I need to do this for this relative or this friend. I need to have this property for this person. This is Maya. And what is Daya? Daya is to just open your heart for everyone. That is Daya. When you identify yourself with a limited self, that is Maya. That is attachment. When you identify yourself with the universal, then what you have is that unbounded love, divine love for everyone, and that is Daya. That is the difference between Maya and Daya, and that Daya comes only when you connect with God. That is how Bhagavan used to always stress about prema. Swami used to say the solution to every problem is prema. All encompassing, unbounded love. That is the way to knowledge. That is the way to wisdom. That is the way to break the boundaries and the limitations of diversity. That is the way to feel the unity. And here, Bhagavan is telling, this superimposition, this adhyasa is happening because you are identifying yourself with your limited self. You are not realizing that the whole world is just a cloth which is made of the yarn that is God. Whole world is just waves on the ocean of divinity. They have all come from divinity. So if we can live with this understanding, with this perspective, and yes, it might be difficult to really live this in action in a practical life, but the way to do it is through practicing this unbounded love. Then slowly we will see that our heart expands and we go out of the limitations of the body mind and we work from the spirit. Once you work from the spirit, as Swami says, the conscience will merge with the consciousness. It is like a balloon. There is air inside the balloon and there is air outside the balloon. Once you burst the balloon, then the air inside will merge with the air outside. You become part of the ocean. You are just Sachidananda. This delusion happens because of the three gunas. Swami says, It is because of the tamoguna, rajoguna, the sattvaguna. And it is these intrinsic tendencies, it is these gunas which lead to various kinds of attachment. Swami says dhaneshna, dhareshna, putreshna, attachment to wealth, attachment to spouse or attachment to property. And one who transcends the three gunas, that person is totally free from both delusions as well as attachment. As long as one is in the grip of the gunas, you cannot escape maya and moha. Swami says, Bhagavad Gita says, achalam charamevacha. God is both mobile and immobile. These two aspects of mobility and immobility are present in all living creatures. When a pot is immersed in water, there is water in the pot as well as outside the pot. In the same way, God is not only in you, but also above you, below you, behind you. That's why the Vedas declare, antar bahishcha tat sarvam vyapya narayana sthitaha. The Lord is present within, without and everywhere. When an iron rod is placed in the fire, it gets hot. The heat is everywhere. It is present in the rod. It is present in the fire. In the same way, the same God is present in man as well as in the whole world surrounding him. There are no two gods. There are no two divine principles. It is only one. There is only one divine principle. Everything that is latent within is only seen as a reflection. The wave is a reflection of the ocean. Everything around is just reflection of the inner being, inner reality. That's why Swami used to always say that the world is merely a reflection of the inner being. Reality is within. Reflection is outside. These are the eternal truths. The rishis of the yore, rishis of yore grasped this truth and they lived in the joy of this truth and they proclaimed it to the entire world. And it is such teachings of truth, if it's reflected upon, it will help us to rise. It will help ordinary people like us to elevate ourselves to exalted levels. We will be able to rise above the daily trials and tribulations, the ups and downs of worldly life. Even though philosophically it might seem very profound concept, but these are the truths that we should strive to understand, strive to practice. Once you take that step, once we have that conviction that we are not limited, and once we believe in it, first we have to believe in it, then slowly we have to fill our heart with love so that we can begin to constantly live in this wavelength and practice this. And once we start, we will see the joy. Once we start this, we will see the different beautiful ways world will be opening up new vistas for us. It might seem very difficult, but actually once you start doing, the journey is so enjoyable that you will just want to be in that zone, in that sphere, because every day you will see that life is becoming just a series of miracles, beautiful miracles of love. Let us embark on this beautiful adventure, on the only adventure that is worth our everything in this world. Everything else is just secondary. Everything else is a routine. This is the only adventure which is worth every ounce of our energy and our faculties. And let us take this opportunity to immerse ourselves in this adhyasa. Swami is telling, get out of this adhyasa. Let's practice. Let's do the abhyasa, the practice to get out of this illusion, this adhyasa. So dear listeners, we'll continue this in the coming episode of Vahini Satsang. There is so much to contemplate upon and we will do it together. If you have any queries, any thoughts, please feel free as always to write to us. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. You can also send us your comments on our WhatsApp number 9393258258. If you want to communicate anything to me personally, you can write to Bishu, BISHU@radiosai.org. These are little efforts that we are doing to share His message. If there's anything that I have said that probably did not make sense, or if there were any shortcomings in whatever I have shared, please feel free to correct me. I am also on the path and trying to just share whatever little understanding that I am able to grasp. So please feel free to correct me, and let us join in understanding these beautiful messages, eternal truths of Bhagwan, and make our lives joyful. Thank you so much. Sayonara.